My talk is about compiling for data processing with strong privacy guarantees. And this is joint work with George Anesis, Mark Wolf, Colvice, and Jianxin Luo. So the problem we are looking at in general is how to deal with data that is both valuable and sensitive. So it can come from various places. It can be sensitive because of its personal data, its medical data, its financial, its legal, and there are a lot of that data around. And what we like to do is to process that data when legitimate in a reliable way while making sure that we preserve the privacy for the rest of the information that is processed. So let me consider a couple of examples. So the first example is smart metering, where now we have in our homes meters that measure how much electricity you are using on a fine-grained basis so that you can have a detailed rate that depends on the time of the day or what you are doing. And this information is really precise, and you can infer the lifestyle of someone just by looking at when they are using electricity. And so some people object to that, to the point that some deployments of smart meters have been delayed. And when you look at it more technically, in fact, there is no reason why we should upload all the detailed readings to the utility. The only thing the utility should care about is to get paid the right amount in the end. And so as long as the user can convince the utility that it is paying she is paying the right amount, we should be okay. And so in particular, you can design a protocol where the meter is going to generate detailed readings that are certified or signed in a special way. Then the user will collect the policies and the rate and will compute the fee together with some cryptographic evidence showing that the computation is correct with regards to the data provided by the smart meter and the utility. So another similar example has to do with pay-as-you drive insurance, where similarly you put a small GPS tracker in your car that measures in real time where you are going and keeps a log of all of that. And the goal is that from your driving habits and also where you are driving, whether you drive at night or during the day in cities or on the countryside, and whether you are often over the speed limit, then you should be able to get a higher or lower rate of insurance. And indeed, this company used to provide detailed rates that would measure how much you are speeding and that would give you points in the same style as points per permits and would give you a much higher rate if you were driving over the speed limit too often and would eventually resiliate your insurance if you really were always over the speed limit. And as you can guess, some people also objected to that, and the idea that your detailed itinerary is transmitted to the insurer is not very pleasant. Nonetheless, and quite similarly to smart meters, as long as the user can get the roadmaps and the detailed information from the reader and can compute and prove that the computation is correct, as long as the insurance company gets the right premium, it should be happy with that. So in fact, there are many similar problems where we want to compute on data, and we have two conflicting goals, which is to preserve the privacy of the private data for the user, and at the same time, to guarantee that the result of the computation is reliable from the service viewpoint, so that only the correct result can ever be proved. So to solve this kind of problem, there is, as you can guess, a lot of cryptographic solutions, but most of the solutions are ad hoc. So in particular, there is a lot of very strong work on non-interactive zero-knowledge proofs for credentials, for e-voting, for e-cash. The problem that we have is that each time we have a new policy, or each time we want to patch a policy, we will need to involve cryptographers and security experts and redesign and validate the protocol from scratch. And so although the basic techniques are quite standard, to actually design, deploy one of those for a given policy is quite hard. And so our intent here is to automate the process by using a compiler. So ZQL consists of a high-level language, which is inspired. So the name is inspired by SQL. You can see that as a small high-level language for data processing. Together with a compiler that takes this source definition and synthesizes a cryptographic protocol and generates codes that you can run directly on a variety of platforms. So the intuitively, the specification is that everything should happen as if a trusted third party was actually running the computation correctly and was releasing just the result under the control of the user. And so that's the specification. And in the implementation, of course, we don't have that party, and so we are going to use a variety of cryptographic mechanisms that from the user of the language viewpoint, we shouldn't care. So the source language doesn't mention cryptography, it just expresses the data processing that it wants to do. Okay, so more concretely, we use a subset of F-sharp, a variant of ML, which is a pure language with basic processing on data, such as integers, so we can do essentially polynomial expressions. And as well as scalars, we have tables, and so we have tables of data or relations from a database viewpoint. And on those tables, we can do aggregates, so we can compute sums, we can map functions, we can iterate functions, we can fold on all the values of a table. And finally, we can do table lookup so that we can use a private index to look up a value in an existing table. So in terms of cryptographic implementations, we use a mixture of different standard mechanisms. So we use Petersen commitments whenever we can for fast linear processing. Otherwise, we use more generic non-interactive zero-knowledge proofs for polynomial expressions. And for table lookups, we use re-randomizable Kamenich-Lisanskaya signatures. So as a current limitation of what we do, I should point out that we do not support the full F-sharp or even the full subset of the language that is provided here. In particular, in the current status, we do not support intermediate tables whose structure will need to be private. So the content of intermediate tables can be private, and that's fine, but their size, for example, is not hidden. Right now, we will need to use fancier cryptography, like vector commitments, to hide the size of intermediate results. Yes, so one last thing I should say there. So the security policy is expressed using standard information flow. So for each input variables, you get to specify, or for each entry, for each column in the table, whether the data is public or private. So it's going to be private by default. And you can also declassify data explicitly by saying this bit of data, which used to be potentially private, now becomes public. So you see that it's annotated in the type, so there is this optional public annotations, and otherwise everything is treated implicitly as private. Okay, so in terms of compiler architecture, we have a compiler that takes as input the data specification, which gives us the shape of the data provided by the reliable sources and the way they are going to sign it, together with a query in the language I have just described. And from that, we generate the protocol in the form of specialized queries for each of the parties of the protocol. So we generate code for each of the signers, we generate code for the user, which is going to prove the result of the query, and code for the utility that is going to verify the query. But all of that is still within ZQL. In a second step, we turn that code into concrete implementation languages. So we have, for now, two backends. We have the main backend is an F-sharp generator that generates F-sharp code that we can run on top of .NET. We also have a partial C generator that has the advantage that it generates code that is more portable. In particular, if you want to run the code on small embedded devices, we are not going to have a big runtime, so we need to generate C code. So in addition, we can also generate type annotation so that we can verify the actual code that is produced by the compiler and not only the formal translations as is done in the paper. So this part of the work is ongoing. So for now, we can verify the concrete code for some examples, but it's not integrated with the compiler. But the goal there is to get a certifying compiler so that you don't have to trust the compiler, but each of the participants can recheck the code before actually running the code for each query that it wants to process. Okay, so in order to compile down to ZQL, so we want to reason about the code and about the transformations in an abstract manner, and so we stay within ZQL, and so we just need to extend ZQL with which is basically a language for basic, very simple data processing, with the cryptographic counterpart. So we had integers, now we had long integers and exponents and group elements as first-class types. We also had primitives to do exponentiations, to do pairing when using bilinear forms, and also to compute hashes and iterate nested hashes and to do signatures of various forms. And so now that we have this extended language, we can see the compilation formally as translations from source ZQL to full ZQL. So this compilation is decomposed in two stages. So the first stage is probably the most interesting and the most novel. It consists of taking the source query and generating what we call a shared translation that keeps the structure of the source program. In fact, this translation is compositional, but inserts a selection of additional data to keep track of the computation. It can be commitments, it can be openings, it can be proof assertions. And so, in a sense, we are deciding in that stage of the compiler how we are going to prove that the result of the computation is correct. And there are many ways to do the proofs with a big impact on the performance. And so that's the most complex part of the compiler because we have to deal with those choices. So I'm not going to describe how that translation works, but the paper contains precise tables that show you how each of the expressions like addition, multiplications, and table lookups can be translated. And then the rest of the translation is compositional. So if you have if you are doing a lookup on a product of values, then you just translate the product and then do the lookup and the result, and so on and so forth. So that's the first stage. So at that point, you have a query that still looks like the source query, except that it is doing much more bookkeeping on cryptographic values. So the second stage is less dependent on the source program, and it's a global stage that essentially implements a Sigma protocol on top of that when needed. And so it works by specializing these shared translations for different purposes. So the two main purposes is to get the prover code and the verifier code. So as usual for a Sigma protocol, the prover, non-interactive variant of it, the prover has two stages. So we first generate the messages and commitments, then we compute the challenge out of them. Then we go back to the computation and we generate all the responses for the commitments we have. On the verifier side, things are easier. We just need a single pass that just recomputes the challenge and checks it. So after those two stages, we can apply more traditional optimizations to remove, essentially to make the code a bit faster. But those are not specific at all to the kind of protocols we are generating. It's just a standard plain optimizations. So we also have two other variants of the translation that are used only for the proof. So they are not actually compiled, but they are used just as a basis for the code-based proof, where by tweaking the translation, we can actually generate the simulator to reason about privacy and the extractor to reason about spatial soonness of the resulting protocol. So again, this white code is used for reasoning about the properties of the protocol, but is not actually run or compiled, although we could in principle. Okay, so I want to give you a brief demo of how it works. So I'm just going to show you the simplest, dumbest example we can think of with some details. And then I'm going to give an overview of some more advanced examples that we have. So the example is just computing x plus y. So x plus y are, x and y are both secrets, but we want to declassify the result. And so the way you would program it in ZQL is just within F-sharp. So here we use the F-sharp interactive top level. You just typing the query, and then you compile it. And as a result, you get three functions. You get a function for setting up the data. You get a function for proving, for computing and proving the result. And you get a function for verifying. And so in this case, because the computation is so simple, we don't need a Sigma protocol. What is sufficient is just to provide a pair of signed commitments, signed Petersen commitments for that. And instead of adding the exponents, the verifier is going to multiply the commitments to check the result. So that's very simple, but at least the cost fits on the slide. So I can show you how it looks. Where is it? Where is it? Okay, so yes, what I'm showing is just HTML, a display of the run of the protocol. So okay, so it works. So we see the protocol running for each of the parties. So we have the private inputs, which are here, 10 and 20. Then the data providers generate the pair of signed commitments. And so here we are using colors for the different parts. So the red parts are secret, but the green parts are the commitments and the black parts are the signature and the commitments. And so both the commitments and the signatures convey no information about the input. So they can be released and passed to the verifier. And in addition, the prover is going to compute the sum of the inputs, 30 plus the sum of openings for that, and pass that as evidence for verification purposes. And so here the verifier gets 30, and you can see or you can guess from the output that in fact the message sent from the prover to the verifier contains 30 together with some data, and it's quite easy to show that this data is statistically independent from the input, so that it contains no side information about the data, so we can run. It runs a couple of times, and in the way it looks random, but well, you can actually prove it, of course. Okay, where are the slides? Okay, so the next example is the one you presented for the insurance premium with Perdue Drive. And so it's similar in spirit, but now the computation is more data intensive. So we have four input tables. So we have the log with the itinerary. And then we have auxiliary tables containing the speed limits for the different roads, the penalty for driving over the speed limit, and the rates corresponding to the number of points that you have accumulated. And so the feature of this query is that you actually need to do a bunch of lookups to process the tables and then to do the aggregation using two sums and finally to do a multiplication. So it's not very fancy scientific computation, but it's typical data processing that lets you implement quite a lot of billing and data-oriented processing. And so if you run that protocol, you get something similar. So the size of the cryptographic proof evidence that is transmitted is linear in the size of the computation. So in particular, as a first approximation. So you may get as much as a bit of a cryptographic evidence for each intermediate variable that is used in the program. But the same general principle applies. So the side evidence contains no information about the input, statistically no evidence about, no information about the input. And it's just there to provide the computational integrity from the verifier's viewpoint. Okay, so my final example, which we also find in the paper, shows how you can do some trigonometry. So we take raw GPS readings with latitude and longitudes, and we compute the distance between two points, which is the basic component that you need to do location-based privacy. And similarly, we don't do really trigonometry, because doing trigonometry specifically in zero knowledge will be a lot of useless work. Instead, we pick the precision that we need, and we use table lookups. And we have CL-signed tables that we can prepare once for all. And then we refer to these tables to do just entry table lookups, pretty precise distance computations from the coordinates. We have theorems, and so the first one is functional correctness, meaning that if all parties are honest, then encoding the data, proving and verifying is the same as running the source computation. So that's a sanity check, essentially. Then we have perfect privacy, which is formalized in the paper as an indistinguishability game, where the adversary tries to guess which of the two sets of data it has provided is being used by the prover, under the condition that the two sets of data must yield the same query response. And the probability, the advantage of the adversary is null, meaning that getting the evidence yields no clue about whether we use the first or the second set of data. So for integrity, we get computational guarantees, not a perfect guarantee. And that depends on underlying assumptions on the integrity mechanism that we use, so notably the CL signatures and the signatures primitives that we have. And they are the guarantee that it's impossible, even by choosing the plaintext, to convince the, even we chosen plaintext, to convince, for the user to convince the verifier of a result that is not computed from data that is signed by the data providers. Okay, so in terms of performance, we tried three different cryptographic backends. So we are the RSA, mostly for historical reasons, and we also have pairing-based elliptic curve. As can be foreseen, the pairing-based cryptography is much better, in as much as the proofs are much more compact, and we get at a comparable level of security. We actually get more security than with RSA 2048, and at a fraction of the cost. Still the cost is not negligible, so it may take as long as maybe one third or half a second to process a line of a bill if the policy is quite complicated, which is quite a lot from the data viewpoint, but for ordinary billing it's completely acceptable. You can, if you do your bill once a month, if it takes 5 minutes, it's okay, and we could probably optimize it a bit more. So the table also provides the proof size, and so we can see that the proof size is typically a few K for the examples we have been looking at. So the final line for each of the examples, which are those that I've presented earlier, gives a symbolic computation. So we can replace the library by libraries that compute symbolically on polynomials, and that's very useful to get a precise symbolic expression that tells us the cost in terms of the cost of exponentiations, for example. And that's also very useful to guide optimizations in the compiler so that we can pick the faster of two alternatives when we don't have a better clue. I'm not going to discuss much related work, I just picked a few. Compared with differential privacy, what we do is essentially at another level. So we work at the cryptographic implementation level, where differential privacy is all about what is leaked by the result of the source query. So if you can use differential privacy to control what is leaked by answering the source query, and then use ZQL to guarantee that nothing else is leaked in the process of generating a verifiable result. So they are more general and more powerful mechanisms. Like fully homomorphic encryptions or functional encryptions and secure multi-party computations. The key difference here is that because we assume that the user is in charge of his private data and can compute in the clear on that data, we get efficient protocols and perfect privacy for a reasonably large class of source queries. So for some computations, like if you want to compute an aggregate that is coming from different users, you may want to use fancier cryptography, like secure multi-party computations or like speeds, for example, but the interactive cost is going to be much, much higher here. The protocol is just one big message with no interaction. Finally, there are more modern mechanisms, like, or more recent mechanisms like Pinocchio, that provide different trade-offs for verified computations, and what's particularly appealing with Pinocchio is that we get more compact proofs, so the proof size is constant, although there are different trade-offs in terms of the expressiveness of the source language that can be implemented in that way. Okay, so time to conclude. So ZQL provides privacy-friendly data processing in a reliable way, so we take declarative queries with privacy annotations, and we compile them to what we hope are efficient cryptographic protocols. So the services get correct results and users keep the rest of the data so that the privacy story is especially simple and strong in that setting. Right, thank you.
I'll take my question then. Can you, just on the last slide, the last thing you said was...
This one?
Or? Yeah, okay. Comparison to Pinocchio, you said there's some different trade-offs. Can you be more specific about what those trade-offs are?
Of course, yes. So So Pinocchio, so first I should say that the cryptography mechanism that we use for ZQL are quite standard and well established. So the compiler does something new, but the cryptography mechanisms are quite traditional. Pinocchio is much more recent, and its obvious advantages is the size, the proofs are constant size, and also the verifier computation is much smaller, although the prover has to do much more work. So if you do basic operation with mostly linear processing and only and process a lot of data, so you have to input a lot of data and the processing is relatively light, I would claim that it's not worth getting into a circuit, arithmetic circuit compilation to do that processing. So now if you want to do a lot of intricate operations like computation intensive processing on a limited amount of data, then Pinocchio is certainly a much better idea. We are trying to see how we can combine the two and compose the two, and so it's still a bit open what we can and cannot do with the two settings. But one of the things that is extremely useful for us and that we cannot do as well with Pinocchio is table lookups. So for many source problems, you can implement any function by one or two table lookups. And that's a big hammer that works well for... So for cryptographic data, the domains are very large, but for source data, the domains are small. So having tables that are pre-signed is quite effective. Within Pinocchio, if you want to input that data, you will need to have an input gate for the arithmetic circuit that is as big as the tables that you are inputting. And then the cost of the whole construction gets quite expensive. So more abstractly, maybe I think ZQL is better at doing I/O and data processing, while Pinocchio is better at computing, or more intricate computations. But they are complementary, and we'll see what we can do there.
More questions? Is the code available?
So, very soon, yes.
Very soon.
Not yet, but very soon, yes.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again.